Hi, everybody. Hi. Welcome to Core Light's Spiritual Weather Report. It's March 27th, 2022, and this is Brad, and I'm here in the U.S., and Leslie, my beloved Leslie, is in South Africa, and I'd like to welcome all of you who are new to Core Light, and also welcome to all of our longtime Core Light friends. And wow, what an intense time we are in, right? I've heard from so many people over the last month. It's really been a time for people to reach out and share how they're doing. So thank you to everybody who's been checking in with me, people who've written in questions and sharing. It's so helpful for me to hear from you, to know what's going on. People from all over the world, I've especially been hearing from our friends in Europe, and I've got some Russian friends as well, who, you know, everybody's been so affected by the war, of course, that I think people are really feeling fear more than ever before. And we're going to talk about that today, but it's all over the world. It's not just in those areas close to where the war is. That war is. There are several wars happening, but around the planet, and many, many people in the United States have also reached out to me. And anyway, let me share with you. When I tuned in today, I got very, very clearly what to talk about. There was no doubting it. And the first thing, probably the main thing we're going to talk about today is clearing war consciousness. Clearing war consciousness. Also related to that is releasing fear and worry. We're also going to talk about grounding on our spiritual core. And we will also talk about developing peace consciousness. So for everybody who's new to the Spiritual Weather Report calls, this is how they work. I start by offering a guided meditation, and then I'll speak about the prevailing energies that are affecting us and also the spiritual principles that are most helpful to us right now. And then we'll have some time for questions and answers. And again, if you're new, I love to hear from you. I love to receive your sharing and your questions. And you can write to me at courses@corelight.org. courses@corelight.org. So please do share. And we close our sessions with a brief guided meditation or a prayer or an exercise or whatever we have time for. It's different every month. There's been so much to talk about lately that we've been running out of time. And if you need to leave, by the way, before the call ends, you can always listen to the recording later. We send out the link to our email list, and it's also posted on YouTube. So again, for those of you who might be joining us a little late, I just want to welcome you, welcome everybody. I'm looking at the caller board here, and I just see we have people from all over the world. There are many people from all over the United States, many different states represented, Germany, the UK, Guatemala, lots of Canadians, France, and more. And I just welcome you all. It's such a beautiful thing that we have this technology, you know, that we can connect around the world. I absolutely love it. These calls with you are one of the highlights of my month. I just love being in the field with you, even though we can't be in the same room and it's not a live interaction with you sharing as well. And it's, you know, just me talking, we create a field, and I feel you, I feel that field, and I hope you're feeling each other. That's what we try to do during the calls, especially during the meditations, is to tune in and feel that beautiful field of peace and love that we create. So I think without further ado, let's go ahead and start with our guided meditation. I know many people need to multitask during these calls, but this is the perfect time to just pause for a few minutes, maybe 15, 20 minutes, and we'll just relax and we'll just tune in. So I invite you to close your eyes sit down, get comfortable, and take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Just breathing in the light and the life force that surrounds you. And breathing out any tension that you might be feeling in your body. Breathing in peace. And breathing out stress. Long and slow and deep inhale. Breathing in the present moment. And breathing out any concerns, any worries about the past or the future. Just letting it all go. Deeply, deeply relaxing with each exhale. Let's make our inhales a little bit shorter than the exhales. This is a little trick to help the body to relax more. This helps activate the vagus nerve, which largest nerve center in the body, which runs all the way down the center of the body. It's that nerve that when we do long, slow, deep breathing, it's why we feel a little tingling in the body, because it's literally helping us to relax. The long, slow, deep breathing and activates the vagus nerve, which helps us to relax. The physiological thing. So just breathing, just relaxing. While you breathe, I'll just speak a little bit about the transmission that comes through on these calls. And as you probably know, my life partner, Leslie, at some level of her being, she's overlighting these calls. And there's a transmission of healing energy that comes through from another level. And so as you breathe and relax, I invite you to just be meditative and receive the transmission. Especially while we're meditating, but also while we're talking during the call, you still can relax and receive. And this is true whether you're with us live today or you're listening to the recording in the future, it doesn't matter, because we're all part of a field. It's a field of love, a field of peace, and we are all connected in this field. Time and space don't really exist at that level. They only exist in the third density, the third dimension. And so I invite everyone to tune into these other levels of reality beyond time and space, where we're all connected in this field of unity consciousness in our hearts. So let's begin with a muscular relaxation, the whole body. I invite you to visualize and feel a warm, viscous liquid pouring down over the top of your head like honey, and feel it relaxing all the muscles that it touches, relaxing your scalp, pouring down over your forehead, over your brow, relaxing all those muscles, all the way down to the eyeballs, relaxing your eyelids, your eyeballs, your temples, ears, the nose, cheeks, mouth, jaw, back of the tongue, back of the head, neck and shoulders. Just feeling all the tension completely releasing as this warm honey pours over you. Oh, you can continue the breathing as we do this. It's very helpful to continue breathing long and slow and deep. Let's just feel the honey pouring over the shoulders and down the arms all the way to the hands and fingertips. Pouring down over the chest, relaxing all the chest muscles and the upper back muscles. All the way down the torso, relaxing the solar plexus. Let's focus on that for just a moment. We hold a lot of tension there in the solar plexus. So let's just take a long, slow, deep breath down into the solar plexus, all the way down to the bottom of the lungs, stretching just a little bit, very gently, and then releasing and feeling all that stale energy in the lungs releasing out of your mouth. You can visualize it as like a dark smoke leaving your body, blowing out and drifting off into the horizon, far away. Let's do that again. Taking a long, slow, deep breath all the way down to the bottom of the lungs, filling up, filling up, filling up, and just stretching the diaphragm gently, just a little bit, and then releasing. Blowing out the tension as smoke, just watching it all drift away. One more time. I'll allow you to do it without my speaking. And let's feel the honey continuing to pour down over the stomach and lower back, relaxing those muscles, relaxing your hips and your pelvis, your whole pelvic region, all the way down the legs, front and back of the legs, all the way down to the feet and toes. Oh. Just letting go completely. I'm going to be quiet now for a few moments and allow you to do a sweep of the whole body one more time from head to toes. I invite you to just scan your body, looking for any place where you might still be holding on to tension, and just breathe light and love and relaxation into that area and release tension with the exhale. Now I invite you to put your attention on the root chakra. And if you're new to this kind of work, the root chakra is at the base of the spine, at the perineum, which is between the anus and the genitals. And if you just allow your attention to go there, you can feel a relaxation naturally happen. Just by putting your attention there, and feel how the root chakra naturally opens when you do that. Just gently relaxing that whole area. And it's okay if you don't feel energy, if you're not familiar with chakras, it doesn't matter. You can just follow along and visualize, and one day you will be able to feel at that level. And so as the root chakra relaxes and opens, I invite you to gently drop your grounding cord from your root chakra down into the center of the earth, connecting with the core of the earth. Some people say it is an iron crystal. Others say that it's something else. I think you can visualize it in any way that supports you. Sometimes I like to see it as molten gold, the golden light, or a diamond crystal. So just connect your grounding cord with the core of the earth in whatever way you see it. Beautiful, brilliant earth energy. Whatever it is, feel the beautiful, radiant core energy that is there at the center of the earth. And as you feel this, continue your breathing and just relax completely, feeling gravity gently pull you towards the earth, helping you to relax and feel the earth supporting you from beneath in the form of the chair or the floor. Relax into the embrace of Mother Earth, just like a little baby relaxing into the embrace of its mother's arms, completely letting go. You are safe. You are warm. You are held in the arms of the mother. And you can let go. Continue to feel your connection with Mother Earth. And let's draw that earth energy from the core of the earth all the way up into our body through the soles of our feet. Feeling how grounding it is, how it anchors us to the earth. As you draw it up into your body, feel yourself as one with Mother Earth. Sometimes I like to visualize, if I'm sitting, I visualize myself sitting inside the earth, maybe with my head just sticking out above the surface of the earth. Or if you're lying down, see yourself lying down in the earth with just enough of your mouth and nose outside to breathe. And feel how connected we are to the mother. We're literally made of, the body is made of the same matter that earth is made of. And when we drop these bodies, we slip them off like an overcoat, and we remain as pure spirit, but the body returns to the earth, becomes one with the earth again. So I invite you right now just to feel the truth of that, to feel the truth that your physical body is one with Mother Earth and the natural world. And let's all just feel a sense of gratitude for this miracle that the body is. This miracle of creation. It really is a complete miracle if you think about all the processes, the millions and millions of processes the body has going on at any one moment. Billions of tiny molecules that make up the body, the atoms. And that actually we're 99% space. That's really the miracle. I don't want you to go into your head about this. This is not about thinking. I'm just guiding you into an awareness. As you feel your body, this is a feeling exercise about feeling your body as one with the earth. And what a gift that is, and what a miracle that is. And who is it that's aware of the body? Who is it that's aware of the miracle? Who is it that feels grateful? And again, this is not to put you into your head. I don't want you to think about this. When I ask these questions, just what naturally arises? What do you feel? Just feel the body and become aware that there's a part of you that's observing. It's observing the body. It's observing the earth. It's aware that you're feeling grateful, that gratitude is passing through you. That you're wearing a body. The body is not you. The earth is not you. The gratitude is not you. None of the emotions are you. Because you are pure awareness. You are pure light and love and consciousness. And all the rest passes through us. You are a perceiver through which emotions pass, through which you experience the world, through those eyes and that, those hands, the touch, the nose that you smell with, the mouth that you taste with, the ears that you hear with. You are the perceiver, perceiving these amazing experiences, these beautiful, beautiful experiences. Beauty of nature, beauty of this planet. It's extraordinary. And just feel it. Just enjoy it. Just love it. Knowing that it's not you. And part of the miracle is that we are one with it. And that seems paradoxical. We're not separate from it. The same energy, the spark of the infinite flame, that we are the same spark of the infinite flame that flows through all life, all matter. And again, this is not for you to go in your head, into your head with, just to feel, just to be aware, to allow this understanding, this feeling, pass through your body, feeling your oneness, feeling your connection with the spirit that moves in all things. The spirit that moves through all things is moving through your body, through the trees, through the oceans, through all the animals and rocks, rivers, through the soldiers, through the people who stand for peace, through the leaders, through the military, through the civilian, through all countries, all races, all creeds of people. We all share this spark of the infinite flame. As you sit with this, as you breathe into this, and feel this in your body, I'm going to say a prayer and an invocation for our call today. We call on Great Spirit, Divine Mother, Father God, the Self that we all are. We invite into our sacred circle today all of the guides and teachers and beings who surround us in the highest love and support on the inner plane. We invite you into our sacred circle, and we ask that you please surround us in a cocoon of beautiful golden white light and love and healing energy. Please guide our conversation into the highest love and the highest wisdom. And hold our hands as we walk into our soul's highest purpose. We give thanks for the opportunity to be here today, or in the future, if you're listening to this in the future, you're still with us, present time. So we're grateful for this opportunity to share at this level, to receive the light and the love, to participate in this beautiful field being held by many people all over the world, many lovers of peace. And before we close our prayer and our meditation for today, let's all visualize that center of peace within us. It's right in the center of the chest, right in the heart. They're like a little radiant sun, a miniature sun, right in the center of our chest. And I invite you to send that radiance out right now to the whole world, to all life, everyone on this call, to all life forms, the natural world, rocks as well, the earth, Gaia herself, all the people, especially those who are suffering because of war, any war on the planet, those who suffer from hunger or illness, those who are grieving because of loss. Those who suffer for any reason, we are sending out our peace and our love in all directions. And we ask for upliftment of all these life forms, the people, the plants, the animals, the minerals, all life forms, Gaia herself. We ask for peace and love and upliftment of all. And we dedicate our call today to peace, peace around the world, peace and love, and joy. Let's throw joy in there as well. What the heck? And we give thanks, knowing that this is so. Alalaho. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Wow. Well, thank you, everybody. I thank you all for joining today, for hearing the call and joining in. I'm very, very happy to be here with you. I wanted to start our call today with a poem. Our friend Andrew Harvey, who many of you know, has written a book called Engoldenment, A Year with Kabir, 366 Timeless Poems. And Kabir, if you don't know, is one of India's greatest mystics and poets. And I I found this poem on one of the pages that I thought I would share with you today. Nearly everyone's drowning in Maya's sea of dark fire. Can't you hear the screams? Can't you smell the smoke? Kabir says, beyond good and evil, beyond joy or misery, the light you are is as it always was and always will be. So I thought that was a good way to start today, because we're going to be diving in a little bit to this sea of dark fire, as it's called, and getting a higher perspective, taking a look at it from a different viewpoint. As I said at the beginning of the call, in case you tuned in late, the topics we're going to discuss today are clearing war consciousness, releasing fear and worry, grounding on our spiritual core, and developing peace consciousness. So let's start off by, I think what we're going to do this month is something a little bit different. Usually we save the questions and the sharing for last, but I've heard from so many people about this one issue the past month, and it's what I keep getting inwardly that would be best to focus mostly on today. And so we're going to start by talking about clearing war consciousness. And there's so much fear and worry going on around the world right now. As I mentioned earlier in the call, I've especially heard from our friends in Europe and all over the, especially Eastern Europe, but everywhere. I've heard from people everywhere about this. And, you know, the fears are around nuclear war and the end of the world and the fear of a madman taking over the world and so on. And I understand, you know, many, especially our European friends, are very concerned because the war feels so close to home there. And many people are wondering, like all over the world, people are wondering, what can I do? What can one person do? And I think we're all feeling a little bit helpless and some people hopeless in the face of such an overwhelming situation. So that's why I wanted to talk about all of this today. And first of all, I want to say it's totally understandable that a lot of people would be feeling fear and worry around these things. What's happening with Russia and Ukraine is insane and horrific, and it's just such a nightmare what's going on there. And I know that we all feel so much compassion for those poor people and all the millions of refugees. It's hard to fathom. And we've heard the stories and seen the pictures. We're just bombarded with these images and the stories. And it's heart-wrenching, absolutely heart-wrenching. And so it's a very emotional time for everybody. And so if you're experiencing this, you're not alone. And it's totally natural that you'd be feeling all kinds of emotions, but especially fear and worry, and of course compassion as well for the people who are suffering, the innocent men and women and children and families and animals. So we're in a crisis. The world is in a crisis, and and in Chinese, the word crisis also means opportunity. So let's remember that this is also an opportunity for us to step more and more into our awakening. And I think all of the things that we're going to discuss today will help us to see the opportunity for awakening that we're being given during a time of crisis. And so just for the record, I know there are a number of people who are coping really well right now. And I know that we're in the minority, but there are some people who are just not feeling so much of the fear and the worry and not getting stuck in the horror of it all, but more focused on the compassion, more focused on uplifting ourselves to support the earth and developing a sense of peace in ourselves that counteracts the energy of war. And even practicing joy, you know, increasing our joy quotient and doing more of the activities that bring us joy, which is a very brilliant way of being proactive about raising the vibration of the planet. So we'll talk more about that later, but if you happen to be in that category, just consider yourself blessed that you're there, you know, and keep on keeping on with maintaining your high vibration and practicing joy as much as you can. There's nothing to feel guilty about. It's important, actually, that we do this if you're able to. It's so important that as many of us as possible are holding that high vibration right now. So thank you all for doing that work. I meet you in that field. And I know sometimes it's just not possible to do that. You know, we're just in the grief. We're in the sadness. We're in the feeling of despair and loss and so forth. And that's perfectly natural. And so if that's where you are, there's no reason to, you know, be concerned about it. It's natural. And so let's start by talking a little bit about the energy of worry. So what is worry? I'm asking you, what is worry to you? And we've talked about this before on the Spiritual Weather Report call. So this will be a reminder for some of you, but please bear with me. I think, you know, we can all agree that worry is certainly up as a theme right now. So a reminder about worry is good for all of us. And I include myself in this. So the answer, my answer is worry is a small dose of fear. So it's basically fear energy that we're working with here when we work with worry. And for many people, the energy of worry is kind of like the water that the fish swims in, you know. He doesn't even realize that he's swimming in it. And for many humans, it's just the same way. It's like the air we breathe. Most of us, We're taught as very young children to worry. Our parents and the school and the media and so on, we're taught to worry about, you know, whether or not we're doing everything right. Are we good enough? Are we smart enough? Are we obeying well enough? And we're even graded on how good we are. You know, we're rewarded for being good and we're punished for being bad, and we're taught that we're superior if we're good and we're achieving enough and we're following the rules and we're compliant with the authority, and we're taught that we're inferior if we're not good enough and we're not compliant enough, and et cetera. So we're programmed very, very heavily from a young age about all of this. And of course, we learn to worry about it, enough so that we don't really think about it anymore. It's just a way of thinking and a way of being in the world. And so I think just to recognize that that's the milieu, you know, that's the water that we're swimming in as fish. That's the air we're breathing as humans. And we're also taught that to worry is to love. So if I love somebody, of course I need to worry about them. And if we're not worried about people, then we must not love them very much. And, of course, all of that is nonsense, because that is based on the premise that fear is love. And, in fact, the opposite is true, you know. Fear and love are opposites. So how can that possibly be? How are we taught this? It's part of the craziness of our world. So our wiring is all crossed from all of that heavy programming that we've received, and the brain is mixed up. And so on this journey of awakening, we're working at deprogramming. We're working at untying those knots in the mind and retraining those neural pathways in the brain. And so just to be clear, I'm not suggesting that we should all start feeling bad because we worry about things. I mean, that's that would also be completely ridiculous and counterproductive. I'm not suggesting that we start self-flagellating because we worry too much. We'd be worrying about worrying. All I'm suggesting is that it's good to bring a witness to all of this, to just name what's happening and to become more aware of it. And that is the first huge step in the deprogramming process. So it's a great practice throughout the day to just stop when you think of it and examine your thoughts and scan the energy in your body and ask yourself, am I worrying right now? Am I carrying any energy of worry right now? And just notice what you feel. Just become mindful of it. Feel it in your body if you can. And if you feel it there, just acknowledge that it's there. And then gently you can allow it to release and leave your body and leave your mind. And it's actually a very simple process. It's just that we need to remember to do it. And the more often we do it, the more successful we are at releasing it and not living it out and not carrying that energy of worry around with us all the time. And we start to become more mindful of this water that we're swimming in. And we don't have to engage with it, and we don't have to let it run our lives. So I wanted to share with you a way that I've learned to handle worry, which has been helpful to me, and that is to put it into perspective, to put the worry into perspective. And if I catch myself worrying, which I really don't do much anymore, but I used to do it a lot. So when I feel that energy, it's much more subtle. And I've learned to recognize it and witness it and just let it go. And so when I feel that energy of worry starting to rise up in me, I stop and I ask myself some questions. There are four questions that I ask myself. I say, number one, what good is the worrying doing? Number two, I try to get a perspective. I say, well, how many things have I ever worried about in my life that were helped by the worrying? Number three, how many of those fears that I was worrying about, how many of them ever really manifested? And the fourth one is, you know, I realize like almost none, maybe none, I think none of the fears ever manifested. So the question is, does the worrying even matter at all? And I guess it's helpful for me anyway. I don't know if this will help you or not, but for me it's helpful in clearing the worry to look back at all the worrying I've ever done in my life. And believe me, it's been a long, long list of things that I have worried about. You know, I look at all the things I have felt responsible for, even in childhood, and I know that this is true for many people, maybe not for everybody. But like I spoke about already, worrying about not getting good grades, not measuring up, not being good enough, you know, not getting enough approval, not fitting in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we're all taught to think this way. And so I look back on all of that worry and I realize what a colossal waste of time and energy it is. I mean, none of the things I was ever worried about have ever come to pass. It's always been a waste of time and energy, and it's always ruined my day to worry. Even times that should be fun and uplifting, you know, it spoils that. There's nothing really to worry about anyway, and yet because we're trained to do it, it's still there, and so it does ruin our day. So that helps me, but let's come back to present time. And I know, you know, when we hear this, the mind still says, well, All right, but what if the thing that I'm worried about, like a nuclear war, for example, really does happen? And you know, then I really should be afraid and I should worry, right? That's what the mind says. And so you might feel doubt start to creep in and think, well, of course I need to worry about that. I need to worry about World War III. Of course I should be worried about a madman who might drop nuclear bombs or take over the world or whatever. But I would argue even that, even to worry about that stuff and to fear it and to, you know, fret over it, it still doesn't serve a purpose. And not only does it not serve a purpose, but something I think we all know and that I say a lot on these calls is that when we worry about something consistently or if we have an ongoing fear of something, we can end up we can bring that to us. We end up manifesting it. We can end up manifesting it, that very thing that we don't want. So it's like worrying acts as a prayer for the very thing we don't want. And at least that's true until we learn to witness the fear and the worry, and then we release it and process it away. So just to be clear, I'm not saying that we shouldn't do something to try to stop the thing we fear, whatever that might be for us. Like, for example, you know, if we're fearing World War III, then we might find ourselves going out and doing things. We might sign petitions or write letters or share how we feel with other people, or we might protest in the streets or talk with others or whatever we want to do. You know, you might take some action that you feel is appropriate for you. And some people will feel more drawn to taking action in the world, and others will feel maybe like their job is more to hold space and to process things energetically. And so I think one of the most powerful things we can do is to meditate and to hold a place of inner peace. And I know that part of us may feel like that's nothing or, you know, it's not enough. But it is one of the most powerful things we can do. And that's actually been proven in studies. And another very powerful thing, in addition to taking some action in the world and meditating, is to process our own consciousness. And when I say processing consciousness, for anybody who might be new to Core Light, what I mean is to use whatever tools that we have to clear and heal the places in us that are stuck in limitation, that are maybe unconscious, that might be blocking our awakening into the truth of who we really are, which is the self with a capital S. And we tend to not want to acknowledge the parts of us that are not so flattering, you know, that the emotions that are not so comfortable. And so we shove all of that stuff into the unconscious. So we're really talking about making the unconscious conscious. And it's also called doing shadow work, because it's about shining a light on those dark places inside of us, the hidden places. So if you're new and you want to know more about this, all of the books and audios and the courses that we offer at Core Light are full of those tools for clearing and healing consciousness. And you can find them all at our website at corelight.org. And I would especially recommend our book called The Marriage of Spirit. It's got some very powerful but very simple journaling techniques in it that are life-changing. And if you're interested in that, you can go, you know, read their sample chapters, free sample chapters on our resources, free resources pages at corelight.org. And there's more there, too. So anyway, I thought today that we should talk a bit about clearing war consciousness within us and developing the consciousness of peace within us. Especially if you're somebody who's feeling helpless and hopeless and so forth, because of the situation we're facing in the world with the threat of war, which can really feel overwhelming, processing our consciousness is something that's proactive. It's something that's empowering that we can all do. So let's start with this. Let's start with talking about clearing war consciousness, and then we can go into talking about peace. And just give me a sec here. I'm going to take a sip of water before we go further. Okay, so I think as most people know, at least if you've been around Core Light for any length of time, or if you've read The Marriage of Spirit, we operate on this ancient spiritual principle that is the outer world is a mirror of our own unconscious self. I'll say it again, the outer world is a mirror of our own unconscious self. So when we find peace within ourselves, we manifest peace in the outer world as well. And that's the basic principle. That's why Core Light, if you look at our logo, the tagline is change the world by changing yourself. So if we want to clear war consciousness, we need to look at the places inside us where we might be holding on to anything related to war consciousness. And I know if we're on a spiritual path, which I assume probably everybody on the call is, it's easy to think that we don't hold war consciousness inside us. I mean, we want peace, right? We don't want war. So if you're listening to the call, then obviously you're a lover of peace, and you probably already made some pretty deep commitments to peace, inner peace, outer peace in the world. And for the most part, that's true. But I think the thing that we're going to talk about today is that it can get pretty subtle. And so I would guess for most people listening to the call, it's probably pretty subtle stuff that we're talking about. So at a very subtle level, any place where we're holding on to, I would call it separation consciousness, that would be a good place to start focusing, because war is just a very gross manifestation of separation consciousness. So let's talk about what that really means. What do I mean by separation consciousness? I think one of the root beliefs within us that causes the separation consciousness is the belief that I'm not enough. When we believe that we're not enough, we try to fill that hole inside us with things from the outside. And so we might, you know, try to become an overachiever, or we might try to make a lot of money, or you know, success of some kind, or we might try to find relationships with people who we think will fill the hole inside of us, or you know, whatever it is. This is the human experience. We're always searching for our missing pieces. We're always looking for our other half. When we believe that we're not enough, we're always trying to fill the perceived hole that's inside us. And I think for much of our lives, you know, we search the outside world for these things. And unfortunately, the truth is none of those external things is really ever going to satisfy us. I mean, they might satisfy us for a little while, but I know you all know this, but when the bloom falls off the rose and we start to feel empty inside again, we just keep searching for more. And that's just the nature of the ego's programming. And that egoic programming, the patterning, repeats itself ad infinitum until one day, eventually, we realize, well, wait a minute, this isn't working. It's got to be something else. And often that's, you know, it comes in the form of some kind of a shattering or a crisis or what we might call a wake-up call. And then we start to wake up and we start to realize that, well, wait a minute, there's no filling that hole up with anything from the outside. It's like a bottomless pit. We can only fill it up from the inside. And then the realization starts to dawn on us. Oh, we need to fill up ourselves. We need to We need, it's an inside job. We need to fill ourselves up. And so as we follow that journey in our evolution of consciousness, in fact, we start to realize we're not empty. We're not empty inside at all. We start to see that that belief of I'm not enough is completely false, completely erroneous. But meanwhile, until we see that it's a false belief, we still keep trying to fill up by getting more from the outside. And so, as we know, what's true for an individual is also true for a collective, because a collective is just a group of individuals. So when there's a whole country full of people believing I'm not enough, that's what can lead to things like governments trying to take the resources of other countries and militaries trying to protect the borders of their own country, you know, mine, more and more, and so on. And so it's easy to see how these inner belief systems like this one can lead to war. And again, it's subtle. I'm talking about subtleties. And so it gives us incentive to identify those erroneous belief systems and to work on healing them within ourselves. And that's how we help create the peace in the world that we want to see. So let's look at another example. Another example of separation consciousness that leads to war is, we talked about this last month. We talked about how easy it's been the past couple of years to divide, you know, to divide our lives into camps where we, you know, family members are separating and old friends are separating based on any number of issues. And, you know, the two most basic examples have been wearing masks versus not wearing masks and getting a vaccine versus not getting a vaccine. So if you find yourself still judging or getting upset with people based on these issues, there's still some clearing work that we can do in consciousness there. And that would definitely be a place where we're holding on to separation consciousness. And also last month, we talked about how we're being invited and encouraged into this, what I think I called it, black and white thinking, where one side is good and the other is evil. And how when we get really, really emotional, which we are right now, I mean, this, let's face it, this is a very emotional time. Physiologically, as humans, we naturally look, during those times, we look for a tyrant to blame and we look for a victim to sympathize with. So this is a time when we really need to be extra vigilant, and we need to practice witnessing those places in us that that might be buying into this and might be judging. Because if we're doing that, that would definitely feed into the separation consciousness. So if you would like to be proactive and you want to do something to help stop war in the world, I recommend doing a little bit of self-inquiry right now and see where in yourself you might be separating from people and judging people. And again, you can just start naming these things. It starts with naming. It's simple, right? We name them, and then that makes it easier to witness them. And then we become aware of the feelings that we're experiencing around them. And so those are some very basic first steps, but they're huge. So it's naming things, witnessing, feeling. So this is big. This is really big. It may seem simple what I'm saying, and I'm sorry if it's all a reminder for you, but the truth is that we all need to be reminded of this right now. I think it's very important to remember that the forces of separation become more empowered when we divide against each other and we turn away from each other in this way. And in case you haven't noticed, the forces of separation have been working overtime lately. Have you noticed that? So let me throw this out to you. It's just spontaneously coming to me here. If you come up with any more realizations along these lines, some like I've given a few examples here, but if you discover more belief systems that we hold that can lead to war, I would love to hear about them. And if you have some, if you get some insights, if you're doing self-inquiry, would you please share them with me? And again, you can write to me at courses@corelight.org. I think doing this self-inquiry work is a very, very powerful and proactive way that we can help with clearing this collective war consciousness and creating peace on the planet. And I know that part of us might think we're powerless and helpless, but that's not the truth. The truth is that we are incredibly powerful. We can create what we want to create. We literally are creator gods, each of us. And so doing the self-inquiry work is a way of stepping more into that power. And that's how the change begins, is, as trite as that may sound, the change begins inside of us. Okay, there's one more example I'd like to talk about before we shift gears. So another place where we might hold war consciousness inside of us. I think one of the roots of war is this notion of what we call othering people. When I say othering, I mean at some level of our being, we judge another person or a group of people as being different than we are. They're other than us. So they're separate from us in some way. And maybe even they're bad or wrong or even evil, you know. But that's what othering is. So, for example, I know that there was a scientific research project that discovered that there's a part of the human brain that lights up when we see another human being. However, when we see a homeless person or prisoners or offenders of some kind, that part of the brain does not light up. So essentially, somehow we've learned to other these people so that those people are outside of a realm of human concern, let's say. So somehow through our conditioning, we're triggered to push them away and scorn them. So I think we're talking about a physiological human response here. And right now would be a great opportunity for all of us to practice this self-inquiry to see if there's any person or group of people that we might be othering. And I know we are certainly being invited and encouraged into that at the moment, especially by the media. So I think we need to be very careful not to get sucked into any narrative that would have us go down that path, because if we do that and if we start othering people, then we're just adding to the war consciousness. And I know that's not what we want. We want to clear it instead. So I think it's important to also mention right now that that this time we're in, this crisis, let's call it, it's super, super challenging, and it's so easy to feel afraid. And yet, this really doesn't need to be about judging, you know, what leader is good and which one is bad, and it's not about which narrative is right and which narrative is wrong. It's not about information at all, really. It's trying to figure out what narrative is right or wrong and what leader is good or bad, and focusing on all the details, you know, who said what and who did this or that and all those kinds of details. They're completely a distraction. Getting sucked into all that stuff is such a distraction from why we really came here. And it's a distraction from how we can help birth this new paradigm of the heart that we came here to birth. War consciousness, war itself, they're part of the insanity of the old paradigm. War is insane. It doesn't work. It doesn't bring peace. War just creates more war. War is how higher dimensional beings define what they call a level zero civilization. And that's where we are on Earth right now. We're considered a level zero civilization, and we're moving towards a level one civilization. And a level one means peace, means a peaceful civilization. There's no war in a level one civilization. And there are civilizations in the universe that increase in number all the way, like way, way up there, all the way up to where there are, you know, civilizations where everybody's an enlightened being, where they all know themselves as source energy, as creator gods and goddesses. I don't know about you, but after this lifetime on Earth, I am really, really looking forward to being part of one of those civilizations one day. It's like some part of me remembers being there at some point. I don't know about you, but I get this such a joyful feeling when I just think of that, when I imagine that that's even possible and that that's where we're going. You know, that's where we're headed. And we're here at this time, this amazing pivotal moment in human evolution where we're literally tipping the scales and leaving that old paradigm into something new that's more heart-centered. We are the pioneers. We're here at this time. We came to do this. So even though it's so hard, it's all and challenging, it's also incredibly exciting, incredibly rewarding. And I'm here to remind you of that in case you're really having a difficult time right now, which so many people are, I know. So I think our task right now is just to focus on clearing war consciousness within us as much as we possibly can and developing the consciousness of peace. This is the pivotal moment that we're in human evolution. Excuse me for a second. I'm going to take a sip. Okay. Are you still with me? I know this is a lot. Took me a long time to sit and really meditate on what we were going to do today. And it just, as it started rolling through, I realized like, wow, this is what an amazing time we're in. This is, we have such an opportunity right now. Excuse me. So just before I shift gears to another subject, I just want to be clear. I know that a lot of you who listen to the Spiritual Weather Report and are part of the Corelight community are empaths, or at least many of us are very sensitive people. And so as empaths and sensitives, we tend to take a lot of responsibility for what's happening in the world around us. That's just natural. And in fact, sensitives and empaths are well known for taking too much responsibility. And we can tend to blame ourselves for not doing enough, and we can start beating ourselves up about it, and we can find reasons that we should be doing more and feeling we should be better at witnessing and processing. We should be processing more, blah, 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 blah. I speak from experience. So if you're part of this camp, the sensitives and empaths camp, you may be one who tends to self-flagellate and to you know, we martyr ourselves for not doing enough. And I know, let me say this as well, I know especially mothers and especially animal lovers We all have a tendency to do this. I mean, I'm not a mother. I am an animal lover. But we tend to care for our children and our animal companions so much that we overgive sometimes and we martyr ourselves because we always feel like we can be doing more. And then we get to blame ourselves and punish ourselves if we feel like we're not doing enough. So if that's you, this is just a quick reminder to just let all of that go. It is not the truth. It is not who you are. This is your daily reminder, maybe your monthly reminder, just do the processing work without judging yourself, without blaming yourself off, without beating yourself up, at least, for the issues that you see in the world around you. Okay. So I wanted to talk about grounding on the core because it is so important. It's essential right now that we learn to trust ourselves, that we learn to trust in our own powerful connection to spirit. And that means we need to learn to ground on our core. And I can share a little bit about what I mean by grounding on the core in case it's new to you. We've talked about it a little bit in the last few months, or was it a few months ago? I can't remember. And I'm going to offer a course on this subject soon. It's actually our original course, was the first course Leslie ever taught, and it's called Spiritual Warrior Training. So more on that. Stay tuned. But we're at the point where it's more difficult than ever to ground on the things of the world, you know, our money, our jobs, our homes, our relationships, the systems of the world that we've always relied on, like the economic system, the government, the media, medical system, people who we put in positions of leadership, or who claim positions of leadership. What's true and what's not true. All these things, these are the things that we used to be able to ground on, and it's not so easy. And I would add even the future of the Earth's ability to sustain life seems like it's hanging in the balance. So we're living in these times of radical change. And I think no matter how old you are, I think we can all agree that for as many decades as we've been alive, the pace of life has continued to accelerate, and it's building to the point where it seems to be reaching a kind of crescendo. And who knows what that crescendo is, what that's going to look like. I think everybody fears that it's a breakdown of some kind. And I think we're also all desiring for it to be a breakthrough. And we're being encouraged to go into the fear and the separation more than ever before. So if any of that resonates with you, this is a great time to do a little extra self-inquiry practice around this particular polarity, actually, of breakthrough and breakdown. In fact, you know what would be great is doing a square on breakthrough versus breakdown. We could all do that square for home practice over the next month. Wow, that would be very empowering. All right, well, I'm throwing that challenge out to you. Between now and the next call, why don't we all do that square? And let me know how it goes. Write to me and let me know if you felt a shift in what you saw. And if you are new, if you don't know about squares yet, it's just one of the simple journaling techniques that I talked about earlier. It's incredibly powerful for shifting consciousness. And I was just talking about processing consciousness. And so the squares are just one way that we offer to do that. And I'm not going to explain it now because we don't have time. And I know many people listening already know how to do a square, but I think for today, why don't we at least name the four corners of that square? And if you are new and you want to know more about squares, you can go to the Marriage of Spirit book. There's this chapter on squares there, and that's on our website, corelight.org. But for today, even if you don't know how to do a square, really often we just say the best way to learn how to do them is just by doing one. So we'll just sort of dive in and you know, this will be real quick. We won't be going deep into it, but let's just get this started and see how it goes. Okay, so the four corners of this square would be, first corner, desire for a breakthrough. And that's the easy corner, I think. We all want a breakthrough, right? So that's pretty easy. Second corner is the fear of a breakthrough. That one might be more unconscious for many people. I mean, that might be about the ego's fear of its own death, maybe. The ego fears its death, but the truth is it's not really a death. It's just a graduation to a newer, better self, a better way of being. And so it's always important if we catch ourselves fearing change and fearing growing into something new and different, it's a great time to remind ourselves, remind the ego anyway, that it's okay to be afraid of change and to be afraid of growth, but that really, in truth, it's a great thing because we're going to be a newer, more improved version of ourselves. And so to remind the ego that there's no such thing as death anyway, the ego doesn't die. The ego just morphs into something newer and better, like a more elegant, streamlined version of itself. So it's kind of nice to talk with the ego like this sometimes. You have to treat it kindly, you know. You have to really let it know that you love it, and it's letting yourself know that you love yourself, right? Anyway, okay, let's keep naming the corners. We could go deep down a rabbit hole here. So the third corner, the desire for breakdown. So that's a really interesting one, isn't it? Because I think we often don't realize that we actually desire the breakdown. I mean, we know that the world needs to change because the systems aren't working anymore, right? We know that our current way of living is destructive and outmoded and outdated. We're destroying the natural world. Most people in the world are not happy despite all the technological advances. It's just pretty crazy out there right now. There's constant war, and war is crazy. War is insanity, like we've been talking about. And most people feel like slaves. You know, we feel like slaves to the money system. We feel like slaves to the clock and slaves to all the different systems of the world. So it's that part of us that desires the breakdown. Right? It's those parts of us that would desire a breakdown. But at the same time, we're also going to fear the breakdown. And we've segued right into the last corner, the fourth corner. Is the fear of breakdown. And that's an easy one, so we won't go into it. I think we all have a fear of a breakdown. So if you're new to squares, all you do is you write those in your journal and you write about the four corners. You put everything down that you can think of. And then when you feel complete, you make an offering of it. You say a prayer and you give it back to spirit and you experience an incredible shift. It always works. So I think before we go any further, since we've actually just named the corners and talked a little bit about some of it, why don't we make an offering right now of that little bit that we just did? So I invite you, this is unusual. We don't usually work this way, but let's just do it. If you're not multitasking and you're not driving, I invite you to just pause for a minute, just sit quietly or stand quietly, close your eyes. and we're calling on Great Spirit. We are making an offering to Mother Earth, Great Spirit. We give back the imbalances in the ego. We give back the four corners of this square, the desires and fears for breakthrough and breakdown. And we're asking to be free. We are free. We're claiming our freedom. We're claiming our birthright of freedom and peace and a joyful, loving life. And we share this with the world. And we give thanks knowing that this is so. Alalaho. All right. Thank you, everybody. Okay, well, that was interesting. I guess Spirit wanted us to do that square today. But there's more to do. We just skimmed the surface. So I would invite everybody to do that over the next month, as we talked about. So I'd just like to go back to talking about grounding on our spiritual core. That's where I was. So I think one of the most important takeaways of learning to ground on your spiritual core instead of grounding on the things of the world is that we realize that no matter how challenging the world is, no matter how chaotic life may seem, the spiritual principles always hold true. And I think this is something really important to remember, especially nowadays. It is very comforting to know that the spiritual principles always hold true, no matter what's happening in the world. And there's a training process to get there. I mean, we don't just jump into that overnight. You know, to get to the place where you can ground on your spiritual core. And that is what we offer in the Spiritual Warrior Training course, and I will be offering that later this year if you're interested. I'd love to see you there. But just to touch on a few of the key aspects, it doesn't mean that you have to give up the worldly things that we talked about, like money, house, relationship, job, so forth, all that stuff. You know, you still live life fully. And in fact, you live it more fully than ever before. It's just that you understand that the transitory world is unstable. And when you learn to ground on the spiritual core of your being, that's when you truly become stable. And ironically, that's how you start to feel more connected to the world, not less, but more. And you're still manifesting these amazing and wonderful experiences and forms in the world, but it's just that you're not so attached to them. And then you can live more in joy and more in love. And you start to discover that that's who you really are. You're the love. You're the joy. That's your true mystical nature. So I think that's a good place to shift gears. We could go on, but I'm looking at the time. Let's move on to the next subject, which is creating peace. So I think, excuse me, I think one of the big truths of this issue is that the wars are created by government, not by the people. Most people, the vast majority by far, you know, I don't know what percentage, but probably, you know, 99 point whatever percent of the people are very kind and loving and peaceful. And, you know, we just want to live a happy life. And I think when individuals from one country meet individuals from another country they usually try to find connection, not separation. If you've ever traveled internationally, or if you've ever met international travelers in your own country, you've probably experienced this. I know I have many, many times. And there's just something innate inside us as humans that we want to connect in the heart with other people, not hate them or separate from them. And it's like we talked about before, it's that part of the brain that lights up when we see another human being. You know, the scientific research shows that. And it's true when we're born, you know. When we're born, we're naturally loving. People have to be taught to hate and to separate, because hating and separating don't come naturally to us as humans. And that's the othering thing that I talked about that's learned, you know, where the brain doesn't light up for certain kinds of people. This reminds me, this whole brain lighting up thing reminds me of a sweet little story. I've been invited to speak now and then at the Orphan Center in South Africa that our humanitarian arm, Seeds of Light, helped start many years ago. And English is not the kids' first language. And in fact, most of them don't speak any English at all. So there's always a translator translating what I say into their language, which is Shangani. And so when I speak to the group of kids at the Orphan Center, I usually take the opportunity I say to them, there's one universal language. And I ask them if they know what that language is. And, you know, of course, it's kind of a trick question, and they always say English. And when I say, no, it's not English, they look confused, you know, and then I say, the one universal language that everyone on earth speaks is the language of love. And, you know, to see the looks of realization on their little faces and the beautiful smiles that these children who have nobody and nothing, you know, they have these radiant smiles and light shines out their eyes. And so, sorry, always cry about talking about this, because I know through that experience that they recognize that truth in their hearts. And I think we all do. I think we all know that truth. I think we recognize the truth in our hearts that the one universal language on earth is love. And I think that we naturally recognize a truth like that in something because we already have it inside us. We already have truth and love inside us. So if we didn't have truth and love inside us, we wouldn't be able to recognize truth and love when we see it or feel it outside. So, for example, you know, experiencing the birth of a new baby or hearing somebody speaking wisdom. Those are experiences that touch something deep inside us. And we recognize those as truth and love. And it's also true with beauty. We recognize beauty in the outside world. You know, for example, in nature, like the beauty of a sunset or a tree or the ocean. And we recognize that beauty because we have that beauty inside us. We recognize the truth of nature, that nature just is. And so we recognize the love inside another human being, even those from a completely different culture, because we all have love inside us, everybody. With very few exceptions anyway, and I think there may be some people who might be exceptions. I think there might be a very, very small number of people who are so deeply wounded that they've developed, you know, a psychopathic nature. They don't have empathy for other people. And so I think or other life forms of any kind. And so I think that the way our world is set up at the moment rewards that kind of personality. So many people like that. Psychopaths, sociopaths, and so forth. They've risen to positions of leadership all over the world, and this is the consciousness of war. It doesn't negate everything we've been talking about in the call today. You know, we all need to work on our own consciousness at the subtle levels, but really at the gross level, I think this is what's happening. And it's why we have war on the planet at all, because it comes from the government. And like we've been talking about earlier, you know, there's the phenomenon of othering as well. And so if we've been taught to other somebody, then we lack compassion for them. And in fact, we scorn them. And that is also war consciousness. So I'm not trying to blame governments. I'm not saying that. We're all responsible, everybody. But I think it's important to name these things. So anyway, that being said, if we want to be proactive and we want to do something to help promote peace and diminish war on the planet, as I said, I think it's helpful to do some self-inquiry work and to look at any place inside us where we might be holding on to any kind of war consciousness inside us, but also to recognize that we can also promote peace as well. And I think that there's a field of peace that we create in the world around us when we develop this deep inner peace that I'm talking about today. And when we develop that, then other people feel it and they pick up on it. And we share it with them just by being in the world. We don't even have to do anything. We don't have to teach. We don't have to speak. Nobody has to know what's happening. We just radiate peace. And it creates a field that's all around us, and it gets shared automatically with everyone. It's just by osmosis. All of our thoughts and feelings are shared. And so when we develop that inner peace, it's just natural that that happens. And like I said, all we have to do at that point is just be. You know, we are human beings, so we can just be, and that's enough. And we talk often on these calls about how to develop inner peace. So I'll just give a quick reminder for today, and then I think I'd like to close. I think we should move on to the questions. I'm looking at the time. So just a few quick reminders about developing inner peace. And just like I said, all of these things I'm about to list, they are in addition to doing the inner clearing work, which is essential, really, to have real inner peace to make that possible. So making the unconscious conscious, practicing witnessing, using any shadow clearing techniques that you have, those are the main things that we all need to be doing to create a solid foundation that we can build a life of inner and outer peace on. Okay, so developing inner peace. So the first thing is that inner peace begins with the relaxation of the body. And that's why I always start our spiritual weather report calls with a guided meditation, because we often forget how important relaxation of the body is. I've heard it said that you can think of enlightenment as just a very, very deep relaxation. And when we develop that deep level of physical relaxation, and we start to feel the inner peace coming on, that's what becomes the foundation for the enlightening of our consciousness. And it's from that place, that foundation, that we can truly love. It's from that foundation of deep relaxation and inner peace where we can love the world unconditionally And we can love ourselves unconditionally. And it's from that place that we discover that we're made of love. And in fact, we experience that we are the love. And then it's from that place of just being love that joy arises very naturally. And we just start to exude joy in everything we do. And joy is the highest vibration. It's the highest outcome, the highest manifestation of the spiritual journey is joy. And then that joy goes back and starts feeding the inner peace. And so it becomes like a positive feedback loop of inner peace that leads to love, that leads to joy, that leads to inner peace, leads to love, leads to joy, and so on. So, okay, I think on that note, I think we should pause at this point and do some of the questions. I've been talking for over an hour, so hope you're not sound asleep. Oh, okay, let me just get back to my notes here where some of the questions are. We had some really, really lovely questions and sharing coming in this month. And in case you're new, the way this works is you can email your questions in advance to courses@corelight.org. And if you're on this web call, you can type in your questions on the Q&A board, and those will be for the next month's call. It's not possible for me to answer all the questions, but I do read all the questions, and I get to as many of them as I can. And just know that if your question doesn't get answered here, it'll get answered somehow, whether I answer it the following month or it might come in a dream or from another person or a book or something. And sometimes if your questions came in late and I didn't get to see it, we just put it in the batch for the next month. So, all right. This is from Susan. Susan says, I've been praying many hours a day for the animals in the Ukraine. I have been praying for animal rescuers also, and of course for Ukraine people, but especially the animals. I've been sobbing deeply at the stories I hear, even the successful rescues. I got exhausted with hours of visualizing healing for injured and traumatized animals and got COVID. Thank God it was not a severe case, but it was a pretty bad case. My question is, how do I know if praying constantly and sobbing helps or harms the animal? My sole purpose has always involved animals, praying for them. I feel my prayers are powerful, but the sobbing and the deep grief is very difficult. My heart has never been so huge and open. Well, first of all, Susan, I just want to say thank you. I feel your love and your compassion, and I know many other people on the call are also feeling the same thing that you are. And I'm so sorry to hear that you got COVID. I'm glad to hear that you're coming out of it. But it's so painful, isn't it? The grief is so intense when we see other people suffering, and especially animals. And I think part of it is because animals give us unconditional love and humans aren't really capable of that, that we feel more pain and grief when we see animals being victimized. That's been my experience anyway. I think that that's true. So your question's a great one, and I know we can all relate to it. The specific question you asked is, how do I know if praying constantly and sobbing helps or harms the animals? So I guess this could be a very long response. I'm going to try to keep it succinct, but I know there are a lot of people who will benefit from this question you asked. So I want to do it justice. I believe that it has to do with how we pray. And the first thing is that having a witness is critically important. And again, the witness, what we're talking about is it's about knowing that you are not the emotions. Remembering that you are the pure awareness through which the emotions are passing. We talked about this earlier in the call, so I'm not going to repeat too much, but just, you know, the witness is that part of us that is awake and aware without judging. It's just aware of the experience without judgment. So that's the first step. And I would say it's from that place that everything else follows. You know, if there's a part of us that sees the animals as victims, then automatically there's a part of us that steps into the savior mode, right? The victim and the savior are opposites. And so that part of us believes that we have to do the saving and we are the savior. And of course that doesn't work. And I'm not saying that that's what you're doing, by the way. I'm just suggesting that you might want to take a look at that, you know, do a little processing around whatever you see there. I feel like it's important to remember that this dynamic of victim savior, and I would add tyrant in there. It's the victim tyrant savior dynamic, because the three go hand in hand. When there's a victim, there has to be a tyrant and there has to be a savior. You can't have one without the other two. And that's part of an old paradigm. You know, it's polarized. It's part of the duality, and it does not see the bigger picture. The bigger picture is that at some level of our being, we know we're not these bodies. You know, going back to our opening guided meditation, we know that we are the spark of the infinite flame, and that one day we slip these bodies off like overcoats and they return to the earth and we remain as spirit. And that's the higher truth. Well, let's not use higher, because that implies lower and that becomes dual. So let's just say there is a truth that's all encompassing that helps us to hold these experiences of suffering. So it's important to remember that at that level, the animals, they know what they're getting into before they incarnate. So when you look at it from that level, they're not victims. And even though I know that that's very hard to hear, and I hesitate to go here on this call, but, you know, At the third dimensional or the third density level of being, of course, they are innocent victims. And, you know, even to say this, to talk about it in this way, can seem very uncompassionate and cruel and cold. And I don't want you to misinterpret what I'm saying. So I hesitate to even talk about it. But since you asked, I feel compelled that I need to share this piece with you. And so I guess then if that's true, then we all start to wonder why, you know, what could the purpose of this kind of suffering and horror possibly be? Why would the animal soul choose to incarnate into this? And if there's no such thing as a victim, then why do we, as humans as well, choose the suffering that we sometimes go through? you know, like all the horrifying images and the stories we've been hearing about the Ukraine, all the suffering of the men and the women and the children. War is just a living hell. And, you know, a part of us would probably even get angry when we hear somebody say that there's no such thing as a victim. And that's understandable. So, of course, it's okay. There's a part of you that's angry to hear that. I understand. No worries. I do think it's important, though, that we take a big step back and look at the bigger picture here. There's an example I can give. I remember when Leslie and I and some friends first started our humanitarian arm, Seeds of Light, in South Africa back in the year 2000 when the AIDS pandemic was at its height. People were just learning about it, and there were millions of orphans, and there was just so much suffering. And I remember there was a hospital ward with all these little tiny emaciated bodies, these little infants in their cribs or whatever you want to call them, incubators, some of them. And, you know, some of them were 2 years old and they looked like they were 6 months old. And you know, there was just this horror unfolding. And I remember Leslie was just crying. And even with her enlightenment, you know, her heart broke and she was still crying. And she asked her guide, she said, why? Why would any person incarnate into a little body like that to have that suffering happening? And her guides explained to her, they said, you know, most of these little precious beings, the souls, quote unquote, that are in those bodies are actually not souls, they are angels. There are angels who come into these little bodies, and their purpose, their sole purpose is to, soul, S-O-L-E, not S-O-U-L, their sole purpose is to help open people's hearts. It's to help compassion birth in our world. And so I remember that so well because it made so much sense to me, and I thought, wow, you know, there's a bigger picture here. So when we see what looks like terrible suffering, it does, you know, and we take a broader perspective on it, we're not negating the suffering. We're not negating the pain that the little being is feeling. But we are having our hearts opened. We're seeing a bigger picture that angel, that little being, that little body and the angel that inhabits it is not a victim. It's here to support the opening of the global heart, to touch other people's hearts with compassion, to help compassion birth in each of us. So I share this with you because to me, it helped me to shift my mindset, my perspective around all of this. And so I know that everyone is having trouble watching the pain and the suffering of the people and the animals of Ukraine. So just remember that there is a purpose behind this. There's a greater purpose, and part of it is to help birth compassion in the world. So let me close. I could go on. Let me close with a metaphor. There's a metaphor that I find very important to remember in situations like this, and it describes the way we can help other people the most. And that is that when there are people, and in this case we would include the animals, who might be down, like down in a pit, and they're in pain and suffering, and we want to help them, we have to be careful not to jump down into the pit to help them. We need to remember to stand up on the edge of the pit and reach our hand down into the pit to help them out. So all that means is just to be careful of how you're viewing the situation and what you're doing with your energy around the situation. To remember your witness and to remember the bigger picture allow your heart to be opened, you know, allow your heart to break and allow it to open and witness at the same time. And so, Susan, I have a feeling that a part of you jumped down into the pit to be with those animals in their pain and suffering. And I think that's how you got drained. And I think that's why you got sick. So just to complete the answer to your question, when you pray for the animals, it's definitely okay to cry, and it's definitely okay to spend a lot of time praying, but you'll want to focus on the witnessing part of it as you do it. That's going to help keep your energy high. It's going to remind you that you are not the one doing the saving. You know, you can pray for spirit to be the one to help alleviate the suffering and to end the situation that causes the suffering. And then you let go and you leave it in spirit's hands, but it's not you doing it. You're not pouring out your energy. That's what you don't want to do. So be sure to call on spirit to do the work for you and witness it as you have your heart opened and you feel the emotions passing through. Thank you so much for that question and your sharing, and I hope that's helpful. The next question is from Becky. I'm wondering if this month there are many people that feel pulled toward moving forward with creating their own gifts and higher purpose in life. Spring is here, and I'm adding that that's the Northern Hemisphere. Spring is here. And the world feels to be calling for innovation and a new way of doing things in all areas of life. I am guided to play with writing children's books. What is everyone turning to create right now? I would love to open a conversation on more collaboration. Well, Becky, thank you so much. Yes, I'm so happy that you're feeling this way, and I can feel the vibration of joy and creativity and being excited in your words. I can feel your energy. And I just want to highlight something that you're saying for all of us, and that is that creativity is so important. Creativity is one of the main ways that we activate that divine energy within us. So I've always been recommending for months and months, I've been recommending to everybody to find some way to be creative, even if it's little. You know, you don't have to write a book if that feels too overwhelming. You can just doodle. You can just sing. You can dance. You can move your body or make a painting or, I don't know, get creative. Do whatever you want to do. But the creative energy, when that starts moving, we're literally moving the divine flow and the life force within us. And it really helps us to rise to our highest vibration. So the creativity is so important. The collaboration is so important. You talked about collaboration. Whenever we're connecting with other people in community, that also lights the brain up and it makes us happy for the most part. So it brings joy, you know, it keeps the vibration high. And I think what's happening is that you're tapping into the energies of the new paradigm of the heart that is birthing right now. And, you know, even though it's a challenging time because we're also witnessing the breakdown of the old, it's critical that we also tune into the birthing of this new paradigm of the heart. We are the midwives. We are the doulas of the new paradigm of the heart. And part of the way that we can help the most with that is maintaining a high vibration. And whatever it takes for you to do that, that's how you should be spending your time. So creativity, doing anything you can that brings you joy. So thank you, Becky. I wish you luck with your children's books and your playtime, whatever you choose to do. Thank you for sharing. And we'll do one more because I see we're out of time. I'm so sorry. The next one is from Alina. And I've abbreviated her question. Alina, I got your whole question. I did read it, and so I'll make it a little shorter for everybody. My question is about the dark emotional time I experience every year between February and March. It is always a deeply challenging time for me emotionally, and it usually involves significant relationships. this year, it's profound grief related to the passing of my mother, which is triggering grief about all manner of things that I have that I had aspired to do in my life that are unaccomplished. And then there's quite a bit of personal information, so I'm paraphrasing here. There are also many things happening in my life that are cause for huge celebration. Why am I crying instead of being grateful and jumping with joy? I affirm that some kind of emotional struggle happens at this time of year every year, and I wondered if you can offer any explanation for its timing or any support of any kind. So first of all, thank you, Alina. I loved your sharing message and seeing the picture of you with your precious little kitty, Frida. And just for everybody else's sake, Alina is from Australia. So I'm really sorry to know that you've been struggling and you're going through a hard time. And you know, it sounds like that's been a lot over many years. So I really get it that it's not easy. So I guess what I wanted to say to you is to be aware that when we grieve, it's not just about the one incident. Whenever an opportunity, whenever we experience a loss and we get an opportunity to grieve, it's always an opportunity to release what I would call accumulated grief from all of the losses in our life that we've ever experienced. So I don't know, like lately, I think I mentioned this last month, but I've been going through such an incredible time. Like it's been so intense. I'm aware of huge growth happening for all of us on the inner planes. And so I've had this experience where I just can cry at the drop of a hat. I mean, you just experience it on this call. It's like I can just weep over nothing, you know, watching a Hallmark commercial, and I'll start weeping. And I think it's partly because I'm grieving certain losses, and it's like it may seem small, but it's an opportunity to grieve more and to let all that accumulated grief go. The heart must have its due. So it's really good to allow the crying, allow the grief. The joy comes when it's time. And when it is time, it's very important to move into the joy. I've talked about this a lot, too, that grief and joy are deeply connected. You can only go as high as you're willing to go low. So the more you allow yourself to grieve, the more joyful you can feel. So there's a lot more I could share with you, but I think let's leave it at that for now. I hope that's helpful. I want to just mention you asked about the part about struggling emotionally every year at the same time. You said February through March. And when I tune in on you, I get the feeling that it has to do with your astrology. And I don't know your astrology, but I wonder if that's something that you have ever had done. I wonder when your birthday is. I wonder if you know about half birthdays. Leslie spoke a lot about half birthdays and how when we have a birthday, the sun is directly over our head. It's like we're fully empowered on our birthday because the sun is fully illuminating us. It's our solar return. The half birthday, 6 months exactly after our birthday, that's a day when we're farthest away from our sun. So it can be a time of great challenge. It can be a time where we're faced with more shadow. We can have certain kinds of challenges that we face then. And I've noticed the opposite is sometimes true. It's almost like sometimes on my birthday, I get given a challenge because I think my guides are being very kind and they they know that my sun is over my head, so I can handle this better on my birthday. But anyway, it can go either way. If that interests you, Leslie gave a talk on it, which is actually a video on our free resources page at corelight.org. If you go to our free resources page and go to the video page, I think it's the last one on there. I can't remember. It's a retreat in South Africa where she touches on a few subjects, and that is one of them. But If you've never had your astrology done, I would give it a try. There's a difference between Western astrology and Vedic astrology. I like both. I have found Vedic astrology to be very, very powerful. Our friend Stephanie Austin, who sometimes comes as a guest speaker on these calls, she does Western astrology, and she's amazing. So she's at Eco Astrology. You can Google Stephanie Austin Eco Astrology and get a reading with her. It might help you to understand and somehow prepare for whatever's happening for you at February to March. And lastly, there's one little thing that I just want to add. I found it very interesting what you asked, because I remember something Leslie talked about long ago when I first met her. She always said that the month of August is a time that can be very challenging for many people. And she described it in a way, and I can't remember everything she said, so forgive me. She didn't actually talk about it at length, but all I remember her saying was that it's a time when we can be put through energetic challenges. We can have processes, emotional processes, shadow processes coming up in August. And she never explained to me exactly why that was, but she said something about it's a time when the guides, the benevolent beings who guide the planet, will institute certain changes. And actually, I think it has something to do with the fact that September is the equinox, and it's a time when great change happens. That's a big change. And so I think August is a preparation for that change. And so that's when certain processes are instituted for the collective. So I say that because what's interesting is you talk about February, March, and that's exactly opposite, 6 months opposite of August, September, and you're in the Southern Hemisphere. So I wonder if Leslie was referring to the Northern Hemisphere, and maybe the Southern Hemisphere gets it more in February, March. And I don't know. That's a question. I'm just positing that so you can meditate on that and see what you get. I hope it's helpful. All right, so we've gone a couple minutes over, and I apologize for that. So why don't we close for the day, and I'll just say a brief prayer to close us out for the day. So I invite you to get quiet. If you're multitasking, this would be a great time to just pause for a couple minutes. Sit or stand quietly. Close your eyes. Just take a few long, slow, deep breaths. We call on the Great Spirit, Divine Mother, Father God, the Self that we all are, all the guides, the teachers, the angels, all the beings who surround us in the highest love and support who are with us today. We bow to you in gratitude. Thank you for the gift of love, insight. Thank you for supporting us. We offer our gratitude for this time that we've shared together, this time to be together in the field of love. We're grateful for the opportunity to wear these bodies on our beautiful, beautiful blue planet, this virtual reality called Earth. It seems so real. We're just deeply grateful that we can be here at such an extraordinary time and be pioneers in consciousness. We ask that you hold our hands as we face the challenges of the roller coaster that we're on. Help us to rise to our highest vibration. Help us to clear the shadow. And we're claiming our birthrights, as I said before. We're claiming our awakening. We're claiming our love. We claim our joy. And we share this with the world. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Before we close, we just visualize quickly, just send your love light from your heart. Energy of peace, this beautiful field of peace that we share. Let's send it out right now to the whole world. All humans, the rest of the natural world, animals, plants, minerals, Gaia herself. We see our love light. As one with all that is, in spirit and in matter. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Alalaho. Thank you, everyone. I love you. I'm grateful that you showed up, and I look forward to next month. So be well.